The March 7th, 2024 Planning and Zoning Commission regular session will now come to order. Commissioner Carroll, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Dunn?
Aye. You're here, sorry.
Commissioner McMahon?
Present.
I'm here. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Here.
Commissioner Placer?
Here.
Commissioner Ford? Commissioner Wilson?
Here.
Commissioner Lowe?
Here.
Commissioner Stanton?
Present.
We have eight. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Mr. Zinner, are there any changes or adjustments to the revised agenda?
No, there are not, ma'am.
There are motion
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Thumbs up approval of the agenda. You can approve this one.
There we go.
Unanimous approval. Thank you. We all received a copy of the February 22nd, 2024 regular meeting minutes. Are there any changes or adjustments?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Thumbs up approval on the minutes. We have seven with Commissioner Dunn abstaining. All. Our first case of the evening, case number 31-2024. A request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of TKG Storage Mart Partners Portfolio seeking approval of a conditional use permit to allow a self-storage facility over 14 feet in height located at 3412 I-70 Drive Southeast. This request was tabled at the December 21st, 2023 and January 18th, 2024 Planning Commission meetings to permit revisions to the request in regards to the design standards and guidelines of Section 29.4.6C and the use specific standards of Section 29-3.3W of the UDC. May we have a staff report?
Yes, you may. Thank you, Madam Chair. On the public notice, as you said, this was tabled both in December and then again in January. And so therefore, we re-advertised with property owner letters and the Tribune ad in mid-February there. 15 property owner letters were sent at that time. So so here is an oblique aerial. It shows the I-70 corridor. Down to the lower left is the 63 interchange. You can see this is just to the east of the roundabout at Keene Street. The grocery store there on the corner, some office, medical office generally to the south. Hotel is tucked into the little nook there on the north side of the property. And then some kind of mixed commercial down the I-70 Drive corridor. And then further to the east and the southeast, you see the kind of darker green wooded areas, residential. So, a lot going on here. So, the property is currently zoned MC, which means the storage facility is an existing permitted use on the site. They wish to expand the existing facility into that southwest corner there, where they have the little leg protruding out behind the hotel. They currently they own the property and have a communications cell phone tower out there, which you'll see in some photos in a minute. As you said, they're seeking a conditional use permit because they would like that the new structure to be over 14 feet in height. That's partially due to some topographical issues, which you'll see in the elevations, but just generally they do want it a little taller than some of the other buildings there. As you said, the 29.3.3W requires a conditional use if it's over 14 feet, and then the design standards and guidelines apply. So we'll get into each of those as we move along. So the red here is the proposed building, and as you can see, it's within that kind of leg to the west that is actually going to be access from the I-70 Drive frontage. Probably hard to make out, but their entry drive here off of I-70 Drive comes all the way to the south, and then right now it loops around the location of the building to provide access to that cell phone tower, which is in the dash box here in the corner. This shows that they'll be paving a large area there and providing parking for both just access and ease of use, because the storage units will be accessed on both the east and west ends of the building. And again, like I said, there's topographical concerns here, or not really a concern, but the site slopes downward from east to west, so that that cell phone tower is on a kind of a low spot, and the building will kind of split the difference. So already said that this is a permitted use, but 29.3.3, which is the use specific standards, has a number of standards that applies, but generally they're going to be compliant with anyway. So those include prohibition of storage of hazardous materials, retail sales, and vehicle or appliance repair. It's pretty generally not allowed in storage facilities, but we've encoded that in our code for that reason. So it also includes specific standards for any of the storage facilities intended to be over the 14 feet in height. That's where the conditional use requirement comes in. And then separate from that is also the design standards and guidelines. Of note here, the waiver of the design standards or the use-specific standards, both would require a variance from the Board of Adjustment. So we're not really seeking either of those at this point, but it may become something further down the road. But so more specifically here, internal to the use-specific standards of 3.3W, there are some subsections there that go a little farther, but this section here, W2I, actually gives the Planning Commission a little bit of discretion here. Says that the Planning Commission should consider contextual uses and forms and impose conditions and restrictions to assure the storage facility is compatible with contextual land use surrounding land uses. It also says that within the subsection, it refers back to the section one and says that you can consider those, but they may be waived in special circumstances. Particularly, I pointed out here that it's not required to ensure visual compatibility. So basically, that's saying that the one section, section one, describes the different standards that would be specific to any storage facility. And then section two refers back to section one saying if it's over 14 feet, these will be the base standards, but some of these may be waived in special circumstances. So in addition to those standards, conditions can be added by the commission as part of their approval. And those can include signage limitations, increased setbacks or screening, and a reduced maximum height. And just for note, the maximum height in the MC district is 45 feet. So the applicants have provided some elevations here. I threw them in here just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, and then I'll bring them back up again as we move along. This here is kind of a street view, Google Street View image, where the building will most likely be visible from the roadway, which comes into play. We can come back to that too. So, so the subsection I've got there, I won't rattle off all of that section notation, but states that the exterior shall be constructed entirely of brick, stone, concrete panels. That include a masonry facade, such as split-face block or other high-quality materials. And it specifically prohibits metal panels and smooth-face block. So that's important here because the existing buildings are actually built with pre-engineered metal metal panels. So the applicant is proposing a similar building, but it has added some components specifically here. The darker gray area on the end, that dash line I showed on the previous slide was indicative of where the building is visible from the street. Generally, it will not be visible, but when you're looking from across that parking lot in that one particular location, it will be tucked behind some trees, but it will be visible. So the applicants added, since their first application, this this gray masonry wall as a kind of an articulation to provide some breakup of that wall space, and then also just a visual component to avoid you know, kind of a conflict in the view shed there. So, let's see. So then moving on to the design standards and guidelines, that's section 4.6C here. There are six components that are addressed in that section with the intent to enhance the public realm and reduce conflicts, prioritize street frontage and the streetscape design, and just improve overall aesthetic design. So those include entries, transparency, wall plane articulation, roof shape, canopies and awnings, and loading dock and delivery areas. And we'll speak to those again. So I said I'd bring these back up. As I said, so this view on the south, or on the bottom of the screen, shows the southwest view. Again, the panel up here is the panel that was added as an articulation. And this section here will be slightly visible from the street, as I showed with the red dashed line on that slide earlier. So this is the east-facing wall, and this is where the primary entrance will be. Again, entryways is one of the design standards and guidelines. We actually require a working entry facing the street. So this is actually tucked behind the hotel and probably won't be visible. But they did have an entry here that technically meets that standard, and it enters into a hallway on the second floor. So I think there's an internal stair to get up there as well, but they have technically an operating entryway facing the street there. Also, you'll note they really don't have any street frontage except on the other, on the northern end of the lot in front of where the office is. So that'll come into play here too. So in terms of the design standards and guidelines, again, our initial staff review noted a number of deficiencies in the elevations. They've submitted revised plans that show compliance with both section 1 and 2 of 4.6C, addressing the entries and the transparency requirements, respectively. The building is located near the rear of the parcel, so it has no direct street frontage where you would expect a like a shop front type of arrangement with windows into the interior space. And then also there's the aspect of security and storage facilities, which is typically the transparency component's typically been waived. And I'll get to that in a second too. So generally the design standards and guidelines, those are determined, compliance with those is determined during review of architectural plans. And so some of those items are not completely worked out, but in an effort to show compliance, a number of those things were addressed with the resubmission. So so then 29.6.4 is the criteria for approval for conditional use permits. So those are basically procedural requirements that staff evaluates and presents to you. And it's basically the six components here where the conditional use complies with base zoning standards, is consistent with the comprehensive plan, it conforms in character to the contextual built environment, is what I was trying to think of. Adequate access is provided, and sufficient infrastructure. And then finally, the last one is that it does not cause a significant adverse impact to neighboring properties. So I kind of jump back here in conclusion to kind of rehash these items, but the applicants indicate general compliance with the use specific standards. Again, that means they're not going to store hazardous materials here. They're not going to allow retail sales and automotive repair on sites, things like that. The masonry facade component included was added in the revision where this building will be slightly visible from the street, which is actually not adjacent but nearby at that northwest corner. So given those items have been modified, staff does agree that little added value is gained by requiring materials that are inconsistent with those already on the property in such an inconspicuous location. So given that the hotel on the north side and then pretty extensive vegetation on the south side, screens the the building from neighboring properties, and then also that the proposed building will match the existing buildings on their property. Staff believes that some leeway is warranted there, and then again, with the design standards, similar situation. The revised material submission materials addressed a number of those concerns, with the exception of the entry and the transparency. But in discussions with the applicant, we agreed that the location kind of negates some of that need for the operating entry door. They have provided one. It's not exactly what we would typically expect, but it is meeting that standard. And then also the aspect of transparency can be waived by the director when security issues may arise. And that has typically been the case with storage facilities. And we've had a number of those recently that have had this similar request when coming in with building plans. Generally, one instance, they turn the building sideways so that the garage doors would be somewhat hidden from the street. But that meant that they had no door and no, like, just a blank wall on the end of the building facing the street. They were able to add a door in that instance, but it just entered one of the spaces. They didn't have an internal walkway, so it's not really a functioning public entry, but it was another way to break up that facade. So that's kind of what we would typically shoot for in these situations, and I think at least some of that's been achieved with what they're proposing here. So and back to the criteria for approval from 6.4. The proposed structure just expands an existing permitted use in the MC district, so there's no conflict there. Other structures are of similar height, and the proposed structures significantly screened from the neighboring properties. The access and infrastructure there are adequate. They'll be improving it, in fact, to add better driveway and repair the existing driveway and access back to that cell phone tower beyond the storage facility, the new building. And then just generally, staff believes there will be no significant adverse impacts. And so it does meet those six requirements in our view. With that, our recommendation would be for approval of the conditional use permit for the self-storage facility over 14 feet in height. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had contact with parties to this case outside of a public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, are there questions for staff? No one else has one. I just have a clarification. So the building material exception, is that also a matter for BOA, or does our approval tonight approve that exception?
So that will be, that is for your consideration to the extent that it would be a condition of your approval. So if what they're showing is adequate to you, a straight up approval is probably okay. But if you're not satisfied with that and you see fit to add a condition of some further articulation or kind of whatever you would see fit, that can be added as a condition of your approval.
But the 2946C our BOA matters.
Yes, okay. The trying to think back. So that component is a part of the section that allows you the authority to kind of add those conditions, and so that's kind of where we're at now. Is
got it. Thank you.
It'd be contextual. It's the contextual based exception. If you
right.
feel that it's not necessary, you have the authority to waive the general compliance requirements for architectural standards.
Got it. Commissioner McMahon.
Just real quick, the building 100 by 55 ish.
I believe. Go all the way back. Oh, it's not.
I'll ask Mr. Crockett when he comes
yeah,
up.
I just didn't see it. I think it's it. Around 100 squared. Yeah.
Jumping out at me. And one last question. What are the lighting standards in this situation?
Just whatever the standard for MC is. I don't know off the top of my head, but it would be similar to the rest.
Do you know what the standard for MC is, how tall they can be?
I believe the maximum light standard size is 28 feet. It would be 20 when you're adjoining
residential.
So this is going to be in a commercial setting, similar to probably.
I was looking around. It's all mostly MOF around it. If I'm
the hotel being MC, and then the Mosier's, which would be to the west, would be the MC. MOF is to the south. So I think we're going to be the standard requirements inward, downward, and would have the foot candle limitations off property.
The other ones I'd be concerned about, the ones, I guess, facing, like, towards the hotel. I wouldn't want that room. All right. Thank you, staff, very much.
Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, we'll open the floor to public comment. Please come forward, name and address for the record. 3 minutes if you're an individual, 6 minutes if you are here for a group, including the applicant.
Madam Chair, members of the commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. Mr. McMahon, to answer your question, start off, the building is about 100 by 110 is the rough size of footprint of the building, just to start off with that. So I think Mr. Palmer did a very thorough and good staff report, so I'm going to just kind of quickly skim through some of my slides here tonight. I think the overview, I think he did a good job. You know, you're pretty familiar with what we're asking for tonight. Again, a conditional use for this specific use. One thing to note is the maximum building height in MC is 45 feet. What we're asking for here, our building, it is a walkout, as Mr. Palmer indicated. On the high side, or the higher side of the parking lot, it's only about 23 feet in height. And on the back side, it's 33 feet. So we're not even coming close to that 45-foot height. We're much less than that in an area that has quite a few taller buildings. We've got the three-story hotel. We've got a six- or seven-story hotel, some other larger buildings out there as well. So yeah, you can kind of see the location here. Here's the zoning map. Obviously, we're not adjacent to any residential zoning, so we feel protected by that. Mr. Palmer indicated that we won't see the building from the adjacent right-of-way. And he had a schematic that kind of showed where the location of the building would be, but his schematic kind of showed that on the front side of the trees. There is a tree line between us and I-70 there. So here's our location. You can see that the building itself is going to be shielded for the most part from the hotel. Hotel is going to screen us from adjacent right-of-ways. Yes, it is adjacent to the hotel itself. The larger grocer to the west is there, and of course our existing facility further east. Scanning out just a little bit, you can see all the other commercial developments in the area, so we feel that it's in character with what's already out there. Again, you've seen these depictions. Again, it walks out from one side to the other from 23 to 33 feet in height. Another depiction there. The green arrow points to where our building is going to be located. So you can see that it's behind the hotel, screened from view. Here's on King Street. It's, again, you can see it's screened. We've got trees that will give it some buffer, as well as the existing buildings. Use-specific standards, I think Mr. Palmer went through all those. I'm happy to answer any questions with regards to those. I believe we are in conformance with those. This project has been tabled several times. It started back in December. It was going to come before this commission in December. However, it's tabled for the purpose of going back and making revisions and working with city staff to come up with a plan that had those different building materials and locations that might be visible from the public view. And so that was the reason for the tabling, is we have been working with staff for some time now to get those standards, get those revisions made so we can be in conformance with those standards. So again, we believe it's consistent with the allowed uses for the existing zoning. It's consistent with the specified use standards, promotes an increase in density around an already existing infrastructure. Infrastructure is there for it. It's compatible, and it comes to you with support from city staff. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the commission may have.
Are there any questions for this speaker? Seeing none. I have a quick question. So you're putting tiny bits of brick on here, but the rest of it is still sheet metal?
Yes, that's basically the plan. Yes, ma'am. Because It doesn't have any really view from any adjacent areas. It's kind of secluded back in our back corner of the existing site. The metal's going to match the existing facility.
I've seen the existing facility.
Sure.
And how has that put you in compliance?
When we're talking with city staff, the intent is so that it is an aesthetic pleasing building from the point of view from where you can see it from public rights of way. And so those locations and where it's visible from public rights of way, those are the locations in which on that back corner is where we have put the brick material.
But that's not what it says. It says the exterior shall be constructed entirely of.
I understand that.
Okay. You made changes to put it in compliance with USS.
Ma'am.
You did not do that.
We have made changes working with city staff to make changes to the proposal that's before you tonight. I may have misled you, and then I apologize for that.
I just want to make it clear that you're still asking for that exception.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I apologize.
I'm sure.
That's something misunderstood. I apologize.
I'm sure what you meant was you were in compliance with what the staff asked you to do.
We've worked together to come up with the
I'll
plan.
Give you that.
Yes, not compliance entirely with the regulation, and this is what's before you tonight. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing none, thank you very much. Anyone else from the public to speak on this case? Seeing none, any commissioner comment? Commissioner McMahon?
This is a CUP, and if we agree that the exterior plan as presented is sufficient, I think it is in everyone's interest if we include that in our motion. I mean, I got the impression from you, Mr. Palmer, and if I got that wrong, that we didn't need to, but I think we need to.
Yeah, that's up to you.
All right.
I would agree with that. Any other commissioner comments? I will say just as for me, if this were not 3 stories tall, I might be okay with allowing it to be 90% galvanized metal siding. As it is, I've seen how that stuff wears. I've seen how it looks on their existing facilities. I've seen it in other places. And even if it is behind a hotel, it, to me, goes against the use-specific standards that we've created for this CUP. And I don't think I can vote for that exception. I'm fine with the height. I'm just not fine with the exterior. Commissioner McMahon.
Pursuant of that line of reasoning, how about I bring that up as an amendment? We discuss that separately and up and down and then go forward to the rest of it.
Well, I don't think you even need to do that. We can up and down the whole thing. I can be the only person voting no if I'm the only person.
Well, I don't know what everyone else thinks. That's
why. Well, I don't either. Commissioner Carroll, did I see your hand? Okay.
Difficulties.
Okay. Any other comment, Commissioner Dunn?
I will just say I think it is a little telling that the hotel didn't come to testify in regards to the sighting and everything else. You would think that they might have some strong opinions about the appearance of a storage facility right next to them. If they had genuine concerns, I'd imagine they'd be here.
Fair. Anyone else? Commissioner Stanton?
I'd like to entertain a motion.
Go ahead.
As it relates to case 31-2024, 3412 I-70 Drive Southeast Condition Use Permit, I move to approve the CUP permitted as self-service storage facility over 14 feet in height.
Second.
A motion was made by Commissioner Stanton and seconded by Commissioner McMahon. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Commissioner Carroll, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Dunn?
Aye.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
No.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson?
No.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
We have 6 to approve and 2 no.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. For our next case, case number 91-2024, a request by a civil group on behalf of Cinnamon Hill LLC for approval of a PD plan for lot 108A of the Cross Creek Center CP plan to be known as Fresh Karma PD plan. The PD plan is proposing the construction of a two-story 5,200 square foot commercial building and a one-story 4,500 square foot comprehensive marijuana dispensary. Associated with this request are 2 revisions to the approved statement of intent for Cross Creek Center. The first statement of intent revision seeks to add a comprehensive marijuana facility as a permitted use development-wide and remove a conflicting restricted use within the existing SOI. The second SOI revision seeks to increase allowed on-site signage for lot 108A specifically. The 2-acre subject site is located at the northeast corner of Stadium Boulevard and Highway 63 North and includes the address 1407 Cinnamon Hill Lane. May we please have a staff report?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To start off, we sent public notice out in the form of early notification postcards on February 5th. We also sent out property owner letters on February 20th and a Tribune ad on the 20th as well. Here you have an aerial view of the property, just to give you some visual context of the property. To the left, to the west, I should say, you have Highway 63. To the south, you have Stadium Boulevard. And in front of the property, the front edge would be Cinnamon Hill Lane. Bit of background about this project. As you mentioned, the applicant is requesting approval of the PD plan along with the an amendment to the SOI to allow for the construction of a two-story 5,200 square foot commercial building along with a 4,500 square foot marijuana dispensary with a drive-through. When it comes to the subject lot, it's currently governed by the Cross Creek Center CP plan, which was approved back in 2008. Following this, there have been multiple amendments to this ordinance. I should note that the PD plan for the hotel, which you can see on the bottom of the slide, was approved, but no construction ever commenced, hence the property is still currently vacant. The applicant approached staff in January of 2024 to have a concept review and discuss the potential development of the site. At the time, staff did identify that there were statement of intent requirements associated with the 2008 CP plan. This statement of intent outlined that C3 uses were permitted with some exceptions, notably including head shops and stores selling drug paraphernalia. Another restriction was 1 freestanding monument sign was permitted for each lot. After further discussion, the applicant showed interest in adding a comprehensive marijuana dispensary facility as a permitted use on the property, and a statement of intent revision would be required to fulfill this request. Drive-up facilities, restaurants, and medical offices are already permitted on the site and have been proposed with the PD plan. Moving on to the discussion phase of the project, there are 2 parts to this. I think we should get the PD plan out of the way. As mentioned, 4,500 square foot dispensary to the south of the site, and you have the future two-story building to the north. Should mention that the 2 proposed freestanding monument sign locations are shown on the site plan, as you can see highlighted in red. I will, like I mentioned before, there is only 1 freestanding sign permitted. However, given that there are 2 distinct buildings with different land uses, we believe that this is justifiable. Moving to the statement of intent amendment, we believe that adding a comprehensive marijuana dispensary facility as a permitted use development-wide is justifiable. Given the social and legal context around marijuana, it was very different at the time when the CP plan was approved, so we believe that re-evaluating the permitted uses on the site is warranted. We also request to amend the signage requirement to allow for the two freestanding monument signs on the subject lot. In regards to the parking, the applicant proposes 75 parking spaces along with 8 bicycle spaces, which can be counted towards total parking. That would bring it up to a total of 83. The UDC requires 76 parking spaces, and you get the details down below. As seen, the proposed parking falls within the UDC and complies with it. With that, our recommendation would be to approve the requested Fresh Karma PD plan and the statement of intent amendment for the signage and the permitted uses on the site. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had any contact with parties to this case outside of the public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, questions for staff. Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick question. You said 75 parking places?
75 parking spaces along with 8 bicycle spaces. So that would be 83 total.
For a 4,000 square foot building.
And the spec building to the north.
Mm-hmm. All right, fair enough at the moment. I noticed there on the site plan a pressurized sewer sewer line is mentioned. Are they having to pump this stuff somewhere?
It does drain to the, if I am not incorrect, to the southeast corner of the property, and then it does need to be pumped from the southeast to Cinnamon Hill, and likewise, there would be a similar scenario, if I am not incorrect, for the spec building that is being proposed.
Next question. Do we have to pump it again after it comes off? Are we pumping this?
No, it is the responsibility.
That's the sufficient pumpage. I just, you know, we get... I'm loath to get involved in pushing someone else's sewage for them. Well, or paying for it.
It is pumped from the southeast corner of the site to our gravity line that runs down Cinnamon Hill.
All right, as long as we're not paying for it. Thank you, gentlemen.
And if I may, if there are additional questions, two motions would be warranted here. First motion being as it relates to the statement of intent revisions. The second motion being as it relates to the Fresh Karma PD plan.
Any other questions for staff? I have a question. Did either the applicant or staff discuss the possibility of turning this into a straight zoning? Because I believe MC would allow them. Is it a lot problem or?
Well, so this is one of the last two lots that are available for development. That are realistically available for development. And no, there was no conversation as it related to converting this to a straight zone, given that the nature of this development has been in plan for everything. The existing site plan that was approved for this about a year ago and an amendment to the statement of intent at that point for the hotel, actually, we're returning this to just a little bit larger than the 7,200 square foot building that was originally approved. So we're trying to get through this project. There's a very lengthy discussion with law as it related to how do we amend the statement of intent, because so much has occurred out here. And so the approach that we are looking at is to retain it as a planned district for the purposes of just being consistent for all of the other lots. And then to keep the revision to the statement of intent consistent with what we have done in the prior statement of intent revisions, which is isolating the paragraphs within the SOI from 2008 and making the changes accordingly. That is how we handled the increase in the development's overall square footage with the hotel. And it is how we have handled the introduction of hotels that were previously not clearly clarified as well. So we're trying to keep this one as consistent as we have previously. As much as we know, we would all like to be able to be out of the business of plan district. This just seemed a little bit cleaner to keep it this way.
Good answer. I just had to ask.
I appreciate it.
Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, if any members of the public would like to come up, come on up. We'll open public hearing.
Good evening. My name is Jay Gephardt with the Civil Group. I have a PowerPoint to talk about the signs if anyone has questions about that in more detail. But to answer your question, Sharon, a little differently than Pat, it was 16 years ago when I did this zoning. It was one of the most difficult projects I've ever worked on. And the neighbors were intensely involved at that time. And there was promises and agreements made through that plan district. So when I came back a year ago and was doing the hotel on this site, I did ask about getting rid of it. And everyone felt like at the time that there was just too much baggage to discard it with the MC that had already been discussed and agreed to and that. And Mike, as far as the sewer, that's a private pump station that, and we didn't design the sewer in Cinnamon Hill, but it's only 4 feet deep. There's 22 feet of fall across this site. So there's no sewer on stadium at all down there. So we had to pump it back up, either that or raise the site, you know, extremely to make it drain.
If I may.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Thank you. Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you. I just wanted, given the issue we've had with other neighborhoods and areas that have pumping stations in them, we're paying for them and people aren't happy with what we're paying for, I just needed to cover that base.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Commissioner Lowe.
Mr. Gephardt, just a quick question about accessible route to the one-story building. I see that there's an accessible route from the public sidewalk to the two-story building, but I didn't see it marked or shown really. I couldn't find it for the one-story building.
To the public way is what
you're... To the public way.
Yeah. Correct. You know, that's a good question, Sarah. I don't have the answer for that. I think when the construction plans are done, we'll have to address that fully in that. I don't know if that's an actual requirement of a PD plan.
That's part of the reason, since we're approving the PD plan. Okay.
But I will be held to that standard when I do the construction plans.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Commissioner Placer.
Yeah, you said, staff report said that you were unable to reach the neighborhood associations. I was looking around and thinking, what could that be? I guess those two apartment areas.
No, Ms. Placer, so when this was done in 2008, the Shepherd Neighborhood Association on to the west of 63 was extremely involved. And then Timber Hill above us to the north was extremely involved. And part of that mitigation that I was talking about with that is that we are required to notify them. And so when we did the hotel a year ago, we reached out and we got no response the first time. Second time, one of them responded and said they didn't have any comments. And so this time around, we contacted the same group and we didn't get anything. So, but we did provide documentation to staff that we did, you know, try, so.
Commissioner Carroll.
Can you talk to me a bit about the parking? How do you get to 83 spaces again?
So the spec building to the north is a two-story building, mm-hmm. 5,200 square feet footprint, 10,400 square feet of building. And then the dispensary is 4,500 square feet. So when you do the math and the minimum requirements, you come up with the 76 required. We've done the 75 plus we're allowed to count the bikes toward it. So we've got one of those required spaces as a bike space, and the others are extra, but they're bike spaces, not additional parking spaces.
Okay. Thanks.
Commissioner McMahon.
Just real quick on this, if you can answer this question, it's fine. I'll ask it loud. Maybe staff will answer it. Cinnamon Hill and the other one, are those HOAs or neighborhood associations? Do you know?
Cinnamon Hill.
That you contacted.
Oh, Timber Hill, they're neighborhood associations.
They are neighborhood associations.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That answers the question for me, actually. Thank you very much.
Anyone else? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public to speak on this case? Seeing none, is there any commissioner comment on the case? Seeing none, would someone like to make a motion on the SOI first? Correct? Yes, I'm getting a nod.
That was my question.
Commissioner McMahon, go
ahead. Just to clarify, I'm going to run this by staff, if you don't mind, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just to clarify, it'd be a motion to approve the SOI revision first, then move on to the PD plan?
That is correct, sir.
All right. Thank you. In the matter of Karma Plan PD SOI revision, I move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Dunn. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Dunn?
Aye.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Gawe Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Ford? Oh, is absent. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
We have 8 votes to approve. The motion carries.
Is there a further motion on this case? Commissioner McMahon.
In the matter of Fresh Karma PD plan approval, case 91-2024, I move to approve.
Second.
Motion was made by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Is there any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Dunn.
Do we need to make any special notations about his commitment to add that sidewalk?
That is a construction plan requirement. They will have to provide accessible route.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on the motion?
Do we need subject to technical corrections on that one?
Can you say that into the mic?
Do we need subject to technical corrections on that one?
I would accept that amendment, just in case.
Commissioner Stanton, do you accept the amendment on? I get a thumbs up from Commissioner Stanton. The motion has been amended to include subject to technical corrections. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, whenever you're ready, we could have a roll call.
Commissioner Dunn?
Aye.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Gawe Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
We have 8 votes to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. Those recommendations will be forwarded to City Council. For our last case of the evening, case number 110-2024, a request by the City of Columbia to amend sections 29-3.3GG, use specific standards on accessory dwelling units, and 29-4.1A, table 4.1-1, dimensional standards for residential districts of chapter 29 of the City Code, the Unified Development Code. The amendments proposed revisions to the regulation of accessory dwelling units, ADUs, and the dimensional requirements applicable to single and two-family structures within the RMF multiple family dwelling district. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, you may, Madam Chairman. So as we have listed, we are proposing some Unified Development Code revisions to our accessory dwelling unit use-specific standards, as well as dimensional standards for residential, the RMF residential zoning district that are contained within the dimensional standards table. The purpose behind why this amendment is being brought forward is first to increase the potential production of ADUs within the community, and second is to create parity in side yard setbacks across all of our zoning districts that are residentially classed. The public hearing notice on this, because this is a general citywide text amendment, was provided on February 20th in the Tribune. So a little bit of our project history on this. Many of you may recall the request was brought forth by Adrian Stolwick, a local architect, ADU advocate, and that request was presented to City Council on the 16th of January of this year. It was at that meeting during the report section that the council directed the commission and staff to give consideration and develop the proposed amendments we'll discuss tonight. On February 8th, I came to you and with the proposed code revisions completed. We had discussed them on our January 19th meeting, generally of the assignment, but on the 8th of February, we brought you the entire package. During that conversation, there was a little bit of additional discussion about expanding the proposed revisions to include elimination of the CUP requirement within the R1 zoning classification. Towards the tail end of that work session discussion, it was concluded that we did not want to mire potentially the more simple text amendments that we were discussing this evening with potentially a more complex and volatile request to remove the conditional use that presently exists within the R1. Staff has not pursued preparing a text amendment for that revision at this point. We're trying to get through a couple of other major amendments, as you all are aware. We will come back and circle around to that once this amendment is through the council process, though. So it is on my radar. We will be pulling it back in together. We need to take a little bit of additional time just to make sure that we're coordinating with our Office of Neighborhood Services, which issues the rental compliance licenses, and making sure that we have a clear understanding of how this revision would then be monitored moving forward. So we're in the process of working through that with them, and then we will bring back the amendment. But just to put everyone on notice, we will be talking about taking the CUP out as part of a broader updating process to the ADU standards. February 20th, as I indicated, we ran the notice, which is a general newspaper notice, as we do with all text changes. We do not send notification out to any select group of individuals. We do have a listserv that has close to 500 individuals on it that receives all of our agendas for Planning and Zoning Commission items, both work session and regular. So if there was somebody that would want to have commented on this, we likely would have heard from them at this point as a part of the preparation for this evening's meeting. And then, of course, on March 1st, we produced our agenda for this meeting, which had all of the finalized text changes in your staff report that you have. So what were some of our considerations? We wanted to identify constraints to ADU production. Ms. Stolwick provided a perspective from her, a unique perspective from her vantage point dealing with individuals within the community that would like to build ADUs but have found particular challenges. So that was one of the things that we discussed at our February 8th meeting. We wanted to simplify the regulations. ADU standards have existed since 2015. They predate the adoption of our current Unified Development Code, and they were an outgrowth of Columbia Imagined, our comprehensive plan, and efforts that were, again, discussed as part of Imagine Columbia's future, which predated the plan by almost a decade. So we have made strides to get ADUs into our code. However, the process can be a little bit cumbersome, and the conditional use process is one of those components. So in order to try to remove that limitation, that's how that came into the conversation. And that's, again, this last point. What was the considerations? It was reevaluating, do we really need the CUP for R1, or if we follow a similar provision that we utilize for short-term rentals now, where only if you have a short-term rent, if you have an ADU on your property, and you have, of course, a principal residence, only one of those can be used for short-term rental purposes. The same philosophy we discussed during our February 8th meeting, and that is partially what I need to talk with our ONS staff about, our Office of Neighborhood Services staff, that deals with the licensure issuance. We want to make sure that we're all in the same space as we want to regulate the ADU usage without having to go through and deal with it in a CUP. So what are the proposed changes? We're revising the minimum lot area and lot width, and this applies generally to all of our zoning districts, and I will get to the more specific components of where there is a difference in the next slide. We are removing restrictions on not allowing a secondary entry door to face the parcel's primary roadway frontage. This is one of the first, well, all three of these are actually what came out of the council directive to us to mend the ordinance. And then finally, the final revision that's going to occur here is as we are revising the side yard setbacks in the RMF district for only single and two-family homes to ensure that they match up with the similar side yard setback that is allowed in our R1 and our R2 zoning district. So, what are the revisions to the use-specific standards, which is 29-3.3GG? We are modifying provision number 2, and the modification there is we are proposing to allow any legal lot, and as we discussed February 8th, this legal lot definition now incorporates AR1, R2, and RMF that were previously recorded prior to annexation or prior to October of 1964. If you meet that legal lot definition, you could be eligible for an ADU permit on a lot as small as 3,000 square feet in area and 30 feet in width. That is consistent with what we changed the UDC to allow platting for about 2 months ago now, and that was to reduce lot consolidations. However, as we discussed at the February 8th meeting, and was not fully accepted by everybody on the commission, but we decided to go here anyways, is when we looked at R1 lots, we felt from a staff perspective that we really did not want to increase the density of dwelling units, because both primary residence and an ADU are fully independent dwelling units. One may be integrated, as the examples here on the screen show, into the existing dwelling, but we didn't want to increase the residential density in the R1 zoning district on those what have historically been considered substandard lots. So while we will allow a lot that has less than 60 feet of roadway frontage down to 30 feet to be able to be eligible for a permit for an ADU, you still will have to maintain the current 5,000 square feet that is in the code today. This is a standard that we may, over time, agree that it's not necessary to retain. And we may come back at some point after we've gotten rid of the CUP process, if this really generates the hopeful invigoration of ADU construction in the community, we may want to come back and we might want to look at this 5,000 square foot standard as well. However, from a staff perspective, we felt that we were getting a little bit too much home or too many homes on too small a lot if we opened up a lot less than 5,000 square feet in the R1. So that is why provision 2 has this variation in it. R2 and RMF already allowed allow two or more dwelling units. And so we felt to justify why we wanted the 5, the R2 and the RMF already allow more than 2, whereas just R1 allows that single family detached. The second revision that will occur within the use-specific standards specifically is provision 6. It is being deleted in its entirety. Doing so will allow that second door to face the parcel's primary roadway frontage. And as stated in the staff report and on the slide, This will likely have an opportunity to increase public safety-related issues, emergency response, because you're going to be able to see how to get into that ADU better. It further recognizes that many homes throughout the city of Columbia already have two doors that face the primary roadway frontage. One may lead into a garage space that may be converted to an ADU. It may run into the laundry room or the back hall of your existing house. But nonetheless, we have many homes that have two doors already. This standard was originally created, as I pointed out in the staff report, really to lessen the potential appearance of duplex dwellings in an R1 zone. We were coming out of what is lovingly referred to on the fifth floor of this building, community development, as duplexia, and we didn't want to continue to promote that through ADU construction. So this particular standard, well-intentioned, really has been a inhibitor in some respects to maybe doing garage conversions more effectively, and therefore it is time for it to go. I think we all can live with an extra door facing the street, and especially if it's accommodating an ADU. So this is not our setbacks. I took this from some other community and then put a white background on it. That's why it looks so nice. But this is to illustrate really the idea of how a lot is laid out setback-wise, sides, front, rear. And this is to illustrate the changes really that are occurring in our dimensional standards table. The dimensional standards table articulates all of the requirements, as you are well aware, that apply to every lot that we develop inside the city of Columbia. The residential zoning classification is in table 4.1-1. It contains setbacks for R1, R2, RMF, and RMH. So they're specific to our residential structures. Currently, we have setbacks that don't align in the R1, and they align in R1 and R2, but not within the RMF. The RMF requires a 10-foot side yard setback, whereas R1 and R2 require the 6. So parity, as we discussed in February, was extremely appropriate. And therefore, what this amendment will do is it will create parity between single and two-family construction that occurs not only in the R1, which is the single-family comparable, but the duplex comparable that's allowed in R2 in the RMF district. It further will gain 8 feet of additional lot width to a buildable area in the RMF because we are taking 4 feet off of either side yard lot line. So you get 8 feet more to build in, which means we may be able to get a better sized small footprint home as we move forward in the future. The revision only impacts single and two family structures in the RMF. There is a note within the note section of table 4.1-1 that specifically states this. And this is to assure that we still are maintaining the 10-foot side yard when multifamily development occurs within the RMF zoning district, so we are not potentially increasing the opportunity to dwarf single-story homes against multifamily buildings. We are promoting a larger setback to ensure that that bulk is not right on top of a smaller house. And then the neighborhood protection standards, of course, further reinforce when you have a multifamily building adjacent to the single or the two-family in an R1 or an R2 zoning district, the step-down or increased setback requirements to reduce that bulk as well. Those standards are not changing, just changing what is the required setback for single and two-family in the RMF district from the 10 to the 6 feet. That is what this amendment will do. So, in conclusion, the proposed revisions are consistent, address the council directive. They are consistent with what was asked of us. The additional revision, we will consider additional revisions to remove the CUP process in the R1 zoning district. Those are forthcoming, but we want to get our act together amongst departments first. Centralization of the ADU regulations and the permitting processes is also being evaluated. And this was an issue that came up about we have such a scattered approach to understanding what is it that you have to do in order to get an ADU permit. And it's interesting, as I went through to pull these graphics today, looking at all of the Google search that I did to pull all these graphics into this presentation, how many communities across the country actually have ADU handbooks. And something that we do not do well here is to consolidate those types of tools and tricks into one location. And hence this whole centralization issue, which is what Ms. Stolwick had brought up initially, is something that we need to be working toward, and we're getting there. The other thing that we need to make aware to the public is there is a fee waiver program that is available, and it is out there for ADU construction as well as affordable housing construction. It is the original fee waiver program was a pilot for ADUs. It has been revised. It is no longer a pilot. So contacting our building and site development department and getting additional information about that is always an opportunity if you're looking at trying to figure out how do you reduce the cost to the individual to build an ADU or an affordable housing unit. So with that being said, our recommendation is to approve the revisions to both 29-3.3GG and to 29-4.1A, table 4.1-1. And one motion is all that is necessary.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Commissioner Lowe.
Thank you for that presentation, Mr. Zenner. I had a question, but it actually goes back to the work session report. In that report, it notes in the language for the proposed FAR language that the FAR is tied to the principal structure, meaning garage, storage building, and ADU would not count because, and in parentheses, it says ADUs are not proposed as being permitted in the medium and small lots. I highlighted that because what we're doing right now actually does permit ADUs in medium and small lots, correct?
That is a very observant connection. And so we will have to make sure that as we discuss that definition of FAR, that we come back, we circle back around to that as it relates to our small lot standard.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, is there anyone here from the public to speak on the ADU change? Seeing none, is there any commissioner comment? Commissioner McMahon.
I just a comment. I want to thank staff for the work they've done on this. I know it hasn't been easy. I know it's taken a while. And I know that in this case, you guys have kind of been a punching bag. So sometimes that's a deserved thing, and sometimes it's not. And in this case, I don't think it was. I have no other comments at this time.
Commissioner Placer.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I was pleased to see a citizen and resident of the Central neighborhood bring this forward. We don't have that happen too often, that someone would bring forward an ordinance revision, and that's something that maybe we should encourage once in a while.
Anyone else? Commissioner Stanton.
Yes, that I piggybacked on my colleague's point. But she had a lot of help. That behind there was the Housing Coalition that worked. She's an architect. She has an ADU. I mean, you know, there was a lot of back-end work, and, you know, I'm glad it came together in a concise, clear way to us. But, yeah, we do need to maybe encourage more coalition-oriented discussion and opinion about what we do.
Anyone else? Commissioner Carroll.
I just wanted to say that I'm very excited to see these amendments come forward. In a lot of ways, they go farther than I thought was possible, and I'm excited to see that change by the group that's here tonight. I take that to mean that there's quite a bit of support, and the perception of ADUs has shifted in our community, and I hope that continues to be the case as it goes to council. I also think that in a lot of ways it doesn't go quite as far as I was hoping, and I look forward to the next part of these amendments to see
what else we think we can do with this type of housing.
Anyone else? Commissioner McMahon.
I'm going to make a motion. And before that, I request the staff, and I'm saying this so council can hear this, that we get some input in 12 to 24 months and see if we need a carrot to go along with these new opening things. In the matter of case 110-20-24, accessory dwelling unit UDC text change to 29-3.3GG and 29-4.1A and table 4.1-1, I move to approve.
Second.
Approval has been moved by Commissioner McMahon and seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, when you're ready, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Dunn?
Aye.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway-Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
We have 8 to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Are there any members of the public here to give general comments this evening? Seeing none. Are there any staff comments?
So your next meeting will be on Thursday, the 21st of March. For some reason, I'm thinking spring somewhere here in the air. So that may be closer to the first day of spring, maybe. We have a couple of cases that will follow our regular work session at 5:30 p.m., where we will be discussing our lot integration project, and we will be moving into the next phase of that, dealing with our subdivision-related amendments that we will have to be addressing, coming back with the gradation of our ground floor area, as well as, I think, starting to talk a little bit about what we may want and use specific standards. Once we've completed that discussion, we will show up here at 7 p.m., and you will have these two cases before you. We will have a final plat of partially, if I'm not incorrect, platted property and unplatted property at 208 St. Joseph. This is to allow for the legalization of the lot to accommodate additional construction of a new dwelling unit on it in order to support a current housing agency that operates here in the city. So Rusty will be giving this report. I have, in the back of my mind, I have very little information I recall on this right now, unlike usual. But it requires coming to you even though it is a final plat because it has not been previously platted. And then the second case that we will have on the agenda is a major revision and a PD rezoning of property that is dually frontaged. The principal frontage of the property and where the PD plan currently is applicable is 90 East Leslie Lane. That PD plan would be expanded to include 107 East Texas Avenue, which is the portion of the property that would be rezoned to PD. This is for Burrell Behavioral Health, and the 107 East Texas property is presently zoned MOF, and they would like to have it merged into the PD plan in order to build an additional residential building for their client base in order to help deal with their growth. Maps associated with these two cases, again, there is our Ash Street, Ash corner of Ash and St. Joseph. The existing building that is there used to be a Boone County Family Resources property, if I recall correctly, which has been transferred to another nonprofit who is now wanting to consolidate the property to build on the very eastern edge of the highlighted area, which has frontage on Ash. That is currently a green space, and they're looking at being able to get a new residential building in on that property. And then, of course, our Burrell property there, spanning East Leslie Lane all the way down to Texas Avenue. So those are your two cases for the 21st meeting. We do have a meeting in April. We have two meetings in April, and the agenda volume will start to pick up a little bit. Right now, we're just a little bit in a lull, but we have been still processing countless concept reviews. And as we generally find, about 75% of our concept reviews turn into real cases. So expect to continue to have somewhat of a stream of projects being presented to you here over the next several months. That's all we have to offer. Thank you very much for your contributions this evening and the direction. We will come back with some new and hopefully interesting information for you to start to evaluate as we move forward in our next phase of lot integration.
Thank you. Are there any commissioner comments? Commissioner McMahon.
Well, two things. Once again, I'd like to thank all the members of the press and the members of academia who were here earlier. Mr. Zenner, to answer your question, 10.06 p.m. on the 19th, it's a leap year. That said, I move to adjourn.
Second.
Adjournment has been moved by Commissioner McMahon and seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Without objection, we stand adjourned.